Chapter 44 Merrin 10 Merrin squinted, shading his face from the afternoon sun. His anxious eyes devised enemies where there were probably none. Were those dark spots in the distance riders, or simply another shadow thrown up by a formation in the rock? There were specks on a closer hillside, simple rock buds, or scouts searching for runaway noblings. The late valley cut a great gouge across the land, its green sides twisting into the near distance until it vanished, the slope of the land hiding the depression from view. Merrin and Renarin hadn't dared travel within its soft beauty. Too many people lived along the lake's riverbanks. Even wearing dull shunna cloaks and simple trousers, Merrin's blade and plate carefully wrapped and stowed on the pack horse, he and Renarin were still distinctive. Riders themselves were rare, even along the late, and Renarin warned that anyone with an eye for horseflesh would recognize their mount's fine breeding. So they cut a path parallel to the late, trying to stay out of sight. Two riders were not enough to leave much of a trackable trail on the hard Rosharan stone, and so their greatest danger came from the eyes of the peasants and travelers they passed.
"We shouldn't have done this," Renarin said morosely.
The boy had a penchant for repetition.
"Well, we did," Merrin said. "Our only hope now is to return with a living Arador to prove we didn't break our oaths by fighting for either side. Do you see anything?"
Renarin shook his head.
"But I'm not exactly experienced at this."
Merrin grimaced. "It's a wonder we haven't been caught already."
"It would help if we knew where we were going," he noted.
Renarin shook his head, looking down at the black sphere in his hand. He carried it with him everywhere, its smooth surface never far from his caressing fingertips.
"I know," he mumbled. "We haven't had enough time to stop and think. But he has to have come this way, Merrin. Father's riders didn't catch him."
"And if he went south?" Merrin asked.
"Toward Rel Arim," Renarin said. "Seat of the king? No, he would run afoul of Elokar's messengers and reinforcement lines. Ardor's party was too large. It would have been spotted by enemy scouts. He came north."
Merrin sighed. But as he had said to Renarin, their time of decision had already passed. They had come north. They had to either press on or turn back and beg forgiveness, and Merrin had no intention of returning to Kolinar without Arador. Unfortunately, none of the towns they had visited bore rumors of Lord Arador's passing. That could mean that Renarin was wrong, or it could simply mean that Arador had stayed to the late rim as well.
Merrin felt blind. He was riding in darkness, trying to feel his way, only he didn't even really know where he wanted to go.
Meanwhile, while Merrin stumbled about, Arador was in danger.
"You don't really know that," Merrin told himself. "Yes, he's probably in danger, but Renarin's premonition is, well, unsubstantial. You don't know Arador is going to die."
Still, the youngest Colin's attitude made an eerily convincing argument. Merrin turned, glancing at Renarin as the two walked down the short hill that had been their vantage point. Renarin's normally unsettling air had adopted a slightly frantic cast, a remnant from his episode in the Ilinra Temple. The boy fidgeted now, always glancing about with a nervousness that bespoke more than a simple fear of pursuit. When they stopped for the night, Renarin would take up charcoal and scrawl on the stones around them, mumbling to himself.
"And this is the man I'm trusting to guide me to Arador," Merrin thought. "Blessed winds, I must be even more disturbed than he."
"That's Pebble's perch up ahead," Renarin said as they remounted, nodding toward the late ahead of them. "It's a sixth city. Not tributing, but independent. It's the largest town for another 2 days. We should stop there and look for information."
Renarin nodded. Visiting the village would mean exposing themselves to whoever might follow, but what else could they do? Renarin seemed certain that Arador had taken the river somehow, though that seemed incredibly unlikely. As they crested the valley wall and began their way down a switchbacking path, Meron was able to see the river in its entirety. The banks on either side bespoke a water flow that was normally twice as wide, and what did trickle past was hardly navigable. It was several tenset feet wide, but its flow was slow, and the many protruding rocks and sandbanks proved how shallow it must be.
"He sailed on that?" Meron asked pointedly.
Renarin looked up. Then he just shrugged.
"It would have been a little higher when Arador passed this way, and the river melds with mountain streams to the north. I don't know, Meron. I can only tell you what I saw."
"Saw how?" Meron pressed. "In a vision?"
"No," Renarin said. "In the patterns of numbers."
"What does that even mean?" Meron protested. Renarin just shook his head. Meron sighed again, letting the matter drop. Pebble's Perch was indeed a large city, though it looked to be in something of a lull. Intricate docks housed a variety of barges and riverboats that were mostly grounded. Those that did lie in the water didn't float so much as sit in the mud, sand, and crom, waiting for the return of the fall rains. Large embankments stood on either side of the docks to protect the vessels from sudden high storm floods, and most of the ships looked to be under some manner of summer repair. The city obviously drew its living from the river. Large dockhouses made up the bulk of the structures, and they gave the city a far less refined look than Kolinar. The streets were arranged in a haphazard, unplanned way, and the buildings lacked general ornamentation.
"The city must suffer during the summers," Meron said.
Renarin shrugged.
"The spring harvest is in, and the villages have to be given time to bring their grain to the city. By the time the storms come regularly again, those barges will be well stocked and ready to ship their goods downriver for distribution. I would think that they find the cycle refreshing. It gives them a few months every year to stop and think."
"Something I haven't been able to do lately," his tone implied. As they approached the city, they dismounted and led their horses, hoping that walking instead of riding would make them look less intimidating or memorable. Renarin was right. Despite the lack of river traffic, the city markets were busy. Packmen loaded with reed baskets hiked in careful lines toward the docks. Apparently, the massive storehouses were used to keep the grain during the searing. Merchants and lesser noblemen haggled beside stalls and tents, and young boys cried out their masters' prices and deals for all to hear.
"I've never seen this side of it," Meron said. "The Inava. I've always kind of wondered what happened to it after we grew it."
"The world has to eat," Renarin said. "And with Prala in ruin, Alethkar has grown rich by its plenty."
Meron shuffled uncomfortably. "Prala was that important a food producer?"
Renarin nodded. "The part of the country you saw, the highlands, was where the traders chose to fight. But that was only to keep us away from the farmland below. Prala has always been the most productive grower in Roshar. Over the last decade, its various kingdoms have been Alethkar's greatest competition for lucrative sales to Thelena and Vaidenar, who mine more but grow less."
"Very convenient that Prala should come under Aleth control," Meron thought.
The more he discovered about the war on the Third Peninsula, the less persuaded he became of Alethkar's moral edge. They stood for a few moments, looking around at the market-goers.
"Well, now what?"
Meron finally asked.
Renarin shrugged. "I don't know. We could always try a tavern, I suppose." "That hasn't worked too well so far," Meron said with a grimace.
So far, tavern occupants hadn't been very comfortable around the two. Meron wasn't certain what they were doing wrong. Shopkeepers distrusted them immediately, and streetgoers were polite but rarely gave them much heed. Meron could probably demand more attention if he revealed his shard blade, but that would ruin any chance of anonymity.
"There are some beggars over there," Meron said with a nod. "The stories always say beggars are great sources of information. When Sadi's Sunmaker was alone, separated from his armies after the Battle of Shurrock, he hid among the city beggars, and they contacted his men for him."
Renarin frowned, eyeing the bundles of cloth and bone.
"I don't know," I doubt they're concerned about more than their next meal.
They probably just look that way, Marin said. Beggars are always part of the organized criminal underground in big cities. They're the eyes of the local thief lord and keep watch over his interests.
Renarin turned his skeptical look from the beggars to Marin.
You know, he said, you have some very strange ideas, Marin.
Being called strange by Renarin was a discomforting experience.
You'll see, Marin insisted, leaving Renarin with their horses and approaching the three beggars. All were older men, though their weathered faces and unkempt beards might have exaggerated their age somewhat. One appeared to be missing his left leg at the knee, but Marin knew from the stories that it was probably just contorted to look that way.
"Greetings, friends," Marin said in a low voice, squatting down before them. "I have need of your specialized services."
All three men perked up, their gnarled hands shooting out in hope of alms. Marin reached into his pocket, picking out a sparkling sliver of ruby set in a drop of glass. The hands reached for it, but he pulled it back out of their reach.
"Not yet," he said. "First I need information."
"What information, master?"
one of the old men said in an eager, lisping voice. "Have you seen riders come through this market recently?" Marin asked.
"Yes, many,"
another beggar said, trying to reach past his companion's hand.
"This would be a special group," Marin explained. 30 in number, with an air of nobility. One of particular nobility."
He gave the last words special emphasis, eyeing the beggars knowingly.
"All jokes saw them," the third man said. "Yes, I saw them. Riders."
"When?"
Marin asked eagerly. The old man paused.
"Today?"
he said hesitantly.
"Today?" Marin asked. Surely Marin and Renarin couldn't have gained that much time on Arador.
He regarded the beggars through narrowed eyes as the other two began to assert that they too had seen the riders come through today. All three clutched eagerly for the ruby chip.
"You are playing with me," Marin said with dissatisfaction.
"No, not playing," the third man promised. "Please, my lord, the chip, a chip for old Juke."
"Ah, I see," Marin thought. "Not enough, eh?"
He reached into his pouch, pulling out a 10-ishmark chip. The three men's eyes widened, and one even started drooling.
"Now," Marin said, "I want specifics. Did Lord Arador come through here or not? What do you know of his travels?"
The three men were too focused on the chip to say much. Marin moved as if to put it away, and they wailed as one.
"Yes, we saw him, Lord Arador. He came with riders, yes. Can we have the chip now?"
"I don't believe you," Marin said. "I want to speak with him."
The three men paused.
"Him?"
one asked.
"You know," Marin said conspiringly.
"Him.
The one who commands you. Your lord of this city."
"Our lord, my lord?"
one asked.
"You?"
another said, cocking his head in confusion.
"Yes, you're a good lord. A chip? A chip, please, Earl Juke?"
Marin sighed, dropping the chip before them.
"Just tell him what I asked," Marin said as the three men lurched forward, fighting for the money.
Marin retreated back to Renarin, who stood with his onyx sphere held before his eyes, staring at it with absorption.
"Put that thing down," Marin said with annoyance. "You look daft."
"I'm not the one trying to reason with beggars," Renarin said, lowering the sphere.
Marin glanced back at the three men whose struggles were drawing attention from the market-goers.
"They're staying quiet for some reason," he said. "Crafty ones, they are."
Renarin looked skeptical.
"Fine," Marin said. "What do you want to do?"
"Ask the shopkeepers," Renarin said. "Perhaps my brother stopped for supplies."
Marin nodded, and Renarin led the way. The sky soon began darkening in the west, the approaching high storm a foreboding sign of their failed progress.
None of the shopkeepers seemed to know anything, though again they were hesitant to discuss anything but business. As soon as they determined that Marin and Renarin weren't likely to purchase anything or negotiate for the sale of grain, the shopkeepers turned their attentions to more promising prospects. The two left another futile conference, walking back onto the street. Renarin looked west, frowning.
"Ice storm coming soon," he noted. "Last one before the searing. We'll have to remember to buy some more water before we leave."
Marin nodded with resignation. Pebble's Perch was another failure.
"The lake turns east here," Marin said, nodding toward the valley bend ahead.
"Do we continue to follow it, or keep going north?"
"We stay with the lake," Renarin said. "He went by river."
Marin was too tired to begin another argument.
"Let's find an inn," he said. "We can—"
"Lord Renarin?"
a man called from behind them. Renarin jumped visibly, and Marin felt a dread certainty that they had been located. When they turned, however, they didn't find Lord Dalinar's soldiers bearing down on them, but instead a short, portly man with a red face and an excited expression.
"Lord Renarin!" the man exclaimed. "It is you! Why, I'd all but decided you weren't coming! Hurry! Hurry! The high storm is nearly here! We haven't much time!"
Marin and Renarin stared at the newcomer for a moment. He was sweating freely, but didn't seem to mind. His movements matched his words, however, as he motioned eagerly for them to follow him.
"Wait," Marin said. "How do you know who we—"
He trailed off, then looked up with a broad smile.
"The beggars," he said. "You must be their lord."
The short man frowned.
"No, I'm no lord. First citizen, though my father hardly thinks I'm worth the title, I'll say that. Come, lords, we really haven't much time. Lord Arador said that you'd—"
"Lord Arador?" Renarin said, stepping forward. "You know my brother?"
"Yes, yes. He said you might follow him. He told me that if you did arrive, I was to bring you down the river. But really, we haven't any time."
Renarin looked to Marin, then started after the excitable man. Marin followed more suspiciously.
"You say Arador told you we were coming?" he asked.
"He said you might come, my lord," the man said. "He didn't know. He thought you might follow, especially you, Lord Marin. He told us to watch for either of you. Indeed, he did. I am Selsun, a man well trusted by Lord Arador, if I might say. Now, to the docks!"
Marin and Renarin followed curiously, leaving behind the market for the equally busy yet far less cacophonous dockside. Their round-bellied guide moved with surprising speed as he wove through the crowd toward a particularly run-down river house.
"What do you make of this?" Marin said, catching up to Renarin.
The younger Colin simply shrugged.
"It sounds like Arador to try and take care of us, even when he's not around. He was right to suspect that we might follow him."
"But that man," Marin said, pointing as their guide ducked into the building, his voice echoing inside.
"You trust him?" "I'm not sure," Renarin said. "You might want to—"
He nodded toward the horses.
"Right,"
Marin said, reaching back and pulling his shard blade free from their packs. It created an immediate disturbance as dock workers paused in their loading, staring at the massive blade.
"So much for anonymity," Marin whispered, resting the blade on his shoulder and walking toward the dockhouse.
Selsun popped back out before they could step inside.
"Hurry," he said. "Follow!"
And he was off again. Marin turned back to Renarin with a resigned look, and both followed after the man. The dockhouse sides opened behind them as a group of workers pulled back the wooden gates. This particular building was fortunate enough to be built close enough to the river that even the receded waterline abutted its sides. However, Marin's suspicions about the river's depth were proven true as Selsun leaped into the river. He was a short man, and the water only came up to his knees.
"Hurry, lads!"
Selsun yelled at the dockhouse. A group of 10 young men were pulling a small vessel out of the housing. It looked something like a sleek barge. It was wide and flat, tapering to a point at the front. It slid slowly into the water, where the young men continued to tug on ropes, drawing the vessel farther out into the river.
"What is that?" Marin demanded of the little man.
"A ship," Selsun said. "Jern, Recklin, get their things and stow them on the calmness. You two, my lords, should hurry up."
"Into the river?" Marin asked. "You mean for us to walk out there with you?"
"Never mind getting your feet wet," the little man said with a chuckle. "The rest of you will join them soon. Come on!"
The little man turned and jumped forward, following his pullers deeper into the river. Eventually, the ship began to float. Barely. The waters came up to the pullers' chests as they neared the center of the river, out beyond the dock's protective embankments.
"By the winds," Marin whispered. "He's a storm rider. That's what the ship is."
As if to mark Marin's words, the ship suddenly unfurled a pair of thick, rectangular sails set in stout, stumpy masts.
"I've heard stories of them," Marin said. "Men who try to ride the waves of a high storm's flood. Some in ships, others on barges, some even in barrels."
"Indeed," Renarin said, then promptly stepped off the dock to begin wading toward the ship.
"Renarin!"
Marin said, reaching out. Behind him, the packmen had unloaded their horses and were moving into the river as well.
"Hey!"
Marin snapped as he saw one carrying his bundled set of shard plate. The men ignored him, however, in their hurry to join their companions.
"Quickly, young lords!"
the stumpy man yelled from the river's center.
"Very little time now!"
Marin turned toward the ominous western sky. Then he turned east, looking down the late valley with its weak river. That river would soon be filled with a crashing wave of water. The lake was too wide for it to be of much damage to the city or docked ships, but a vessel left out when the floodwaters came? All of the storm rider tales ended the same way, with a destroyed ship and a set of dead occupants. Told around the hearth, they had been funny tales to a young boy who had never seen river or lake, and the storytellers had always exaggerated the folly of those foolish enough to try and survive sailing during a high storm. Marin closed his eyes as Selsun called for him again.
"I'll probably make one boulder of a tale," he thought. "The young soldier who saved the king, then got himself killed trying to storm ride."
He stepped into the water anyway, following after Renarin.
"This is stupid," he called at his friend. "Renarin, I've seen the floodwaters in Kolinar. No ship could survive that. Renarin!"
Renarin had reached the vessel and Selsun stood on one side helping him up. The air was already cooling, the winds picking up slightly, and the river water seemed to be moving more swiftly.
"It'll be all right, young lord," Selsun said. "I've done this twice already."
"It's madness," Marin insisted.
"No, you see,"
Selsun said as Marin approached.
"I know the secret. Everyone else tries to ride the wave of water that comes with the storm. But us, we're not going to do that. The winds, they're the key. They'll push this ship forward even in 3 feet of water. The sails are angled. They lift us up, and we skim just on top of the water. Have you ever skipped rocks on the river, young lord?"
"No,"
Marin said flatly.
"Oh, well, you'll see what I mean soon enough. Come on up."
Marin stood in the cool water, staring at the vessel. It was so thin, so frail. Though its well-built sails gave an illusion of strength, Marin had felt summer high storms. Renarin was letting two of the servants lash him to a seat near the side of the vessel.
"Come on, Marin," he said, eyes alight. "I told you he went by river, and I was right. I saw it. I was right."
"This is madness," Marin muttered again, but didn't complain as two dockhands hoisted him onto the deck. He stood dripping as one motioned for him to lash down his shard blade. Selsun stood, a broad, almost maniac smile splitting his face.
"The high storms are like giant waves, you see,"
he whispered with an eager voice.
"Massive waves of wind and water that sweep across the land. First east to west, then back west to east again, reversing direction with each storm. They're like a broom being pulled across the stones. We're just going to let ourselves be a speck of dust caught in that broom's tines."
He winked.
Trust me.
It's terribly fun.
Terrible, Marin said sickly. Somehow he suspected this was going to be far worse than the time Arador had made him gallop on horseback. Two men lashed him into place, then they began adjusting ballast, the captain yelling at them to be quick as he watched the oncoming storm with a mixed nervous excitement.
"Here she comes!" Selsun finally yelled. "Back, lads! Out of the floodway!"
The dockhands scattered, leaving the insane vessel bobbing slightly in the shallow waters. Marin turned with apprehension as a rushing sound approached. He could see the rain wall streaking toward them. Behind it roared a massive, crushing wave of rumbling liquid. It frothed and beat upon itself like a pulsating beast of brown and white, its howl that of screaming winds.
"The only trick to this all is steering," Selsun called. "If I take us the wrong direction, we'll be caught in the winds and ripped to pieces."
Marin gulped.
"What do we do if that happens?" he screamed over the water's roar.
Selsun smiled, catching Marin's eye.
"If that happens, lad," he bellowed, "hold your breath."
The winds hit a second later. Vornism didn't speak much of the afterlife. The monks said that it was not man's place to worry about the next life, but that his focus should be on this one. The mortal life was where man faced his challenges, and to the Vorans those challenges were manifest in the danger of the storm shades. The returns were finished, Vornism now taught, but there was much that could be learned from the past. The Hothan themselves were a metaphor. When the storm shades threatened, men had been forced to live within the precepts of society, not creating chaos or fighting against other men, for all of humankind had a far greater enemy to face. Men needed that same unity in everything they did. If one pressed the monks to speak about the afterlife, they simply explained that living well, remaking oneself by transforming the 10 carnal attributes into the 10 divine attributes, would assure a man rewards. The Ilinra priests were more forthcoming. They whispered of the Almighty's dwelling, the radiant gathering of stars that shone in the night sky. The dwelling was said to be at the very center of that collection of stars, where the points of light were so thick that one couldn't distinguish space between them. That place of light and peace was where the souls of good men would find rest. There were other places, too. One, Kothar, was a place of fire and smoke. Kothar was the land of the storm shades, and the Ilinra taught that this was a land where the souls of men who did not follow the Almighty were punished. There was a place even worse, however, the Deep, a place reserved for men who professed allegiance to the Almighty, but who were evil in their hearts. This was a place of special suffering, a land of dark coldness, a land of madness. Marin hadn't expected to find himself there. But where else could he be than the Deep? What had he done that he would lie bound, his screams lapped up by the high storm's roar, his face beaten by both rains and the crashing waves from the river below? The wind of the tempest pushed from behind, but it was doubled by passing air to the sides, a wind created as their boat moved at a ridiculous speed over the waters. Cities, dark from the clouds overhead, blipped past like drops of forgotten rain. If men in them watched the river, they might have seen fools caught in a perpetual roar of destruction. They might have heard screams of terror over the wind, but they probably didn't. Fortunately, unconsciousness took Marin before madness could. The feeling of wet soreness that awakened him was worse even than the pain he had felt on his second day in the army. Marin felt as if a 10 set of spearmen had taken their practice weapons and beaten him repeatedly. He groaned, water dripping from his mouth. He would have vomited, but he had freed his stomach of its contents before the first few minutes of travel had passed.
"Oh, first time's the worst, you know," Selsun's voice quipped from a short distance away.
Marin opened sodden eyes, lifting his face from the wooden plank.
His bonds had been loosed, but he could barely move anyway.
"Hand me my sword," he mumbled. "I'm going to kill you."
Selsun laughed. Marin groggily located the man standing on the deck a short distance away, fiddling with some ropes near the sails.
"Thought we'd overshoot there for a moment. Almost couldn't get these knots undone. That's the really tricky part. Anyone can start, but stopping? Well, that takes a smooth hand. Have to find an open place where the storm flood weakens, then cut the sails and ride it out. But we made it. My men should have seen us pass. They'll be here soon."
Marin managed to sit. His head hurt worst of all, and he blinked in the waning light. It was dusk, and they seemed to be floating on a random section of the river, no buildings in sight.
"Where are we?" he asked.
"Near Jeznarn," the man said. "About 50 miles north of Krossgard."
Marin froze, pain forgotten for a moment.
50 miles north of... But that trip could take weeks on foot. How long were we...
"Usually takes about 5 hours," Selsun said happily.
"Halfway across the kingdom in 5 hours."
Marin had marched that same distance in the army and had taken more than 3 weeks. Selsun noticed his wonder. He waddled near, then stooped down, grinning.
"This is it, you see, young lord? The future. No more waiting for messengers on horses, no. We have a new way of traveling. New, bright, and wondrous."
"New, bright, and insane," Marin mumbled, rubbing his bruised right arm. "Besides, what if you want to send a message south instead of east or west? Or what if you want it delivered during the summer, when days pass without storms? In fact, what if you don't happen to live near a lake at all?"
Selsun rubbed his chin.
"I'm working on a way to do it without the river," he said. "Though I haven't quite decided how to do it without the storm. That part's kind of central to the strategy, eh?"
Marin lurched to his feet, stumbling over to where Renarin still lay, wet and unconscious.
"You're crazier than a rock with no name," Marin said, patting Renarin's cheek and trying to wake him up.
"Ha! You don't know how lucky you are. Why, poor Arador, he had to come on the big ship."
"The big ship?" Marin asked, turning.
"Sure," Selsun said. "This gal, the Calmness, is the design ship. I built it first as a kind of model, then built the larger version that Arador rode. He had so many men with him that we couldn't fit them all on the little ship. Safer, true, but not half as exciting."
Marin closed his eyes.
"Ignore him. Ignore him. You're alive and you're near Krossgard."
He turned back to Renarin, who was beginning to stir. Renarin opened his eyes, groaning.
"So this is what they do to boys who disobey their fathers," he mumbled, as Marin helped him up.
He paused, freezing, then reached for his pocket with an urgent motion. He pulled free the onyx sphere with a sigh of relief.
"Ah! There they are,"
Selsun said, pointing toward a group of riders descending the late slope.
"They're good men. Much obliged, like I am, to Lord Arador's generosity. We'll give you a pair of horses to replace the ones you left at the perch, and you can be on your way. You could be to Krossgard in a few days if you ride hard."
Marin sighed at the thought of more traveling. He looked at Renarin, who didn't look much better. But Renarin was right. Arador did come by river. A clever guess, given what Arador had said back in Kolinar, or something else?
"Let's go," Renarin said. "We need to find him as quickly as possible."